Now that the classes are on Saturday night, I can record them. So we will record them. Have them for posterity. And more importantly, remember where we left off. Anyway, we're going to begin the third chapter. I think we did this very beginning of the third chapter as the last class, but it's been quite a while. And since we're, you know, starting up the third chapter again, I figured we'd do it again. There is something new that I'm introducing today. So we're going to do a little bit less of what we did last time and something new as well. The third chapter of Masechet Megillah has a lot of the laws of the Torah reading. The fourth chapter is a lot of the laws of a shul. So it's very practical, two chapters. Let's begin.
HaKoreh et HaMegillah Omed VeYoshev. One who reads the Megillah sits and stands, or sits or stands. Very really means or here. What do you think that means?
Not reclines.
Okay.
But you could do it either way.
You could do it either way. Right? Normally, we don't have that many choices. You have to do this. You have to do that. Here, we have an option. It seems like you have an option. You can either sit or you can stand.
Just can't lay down.
Yeah. Ka'a echad. Karoa shnaim yatsu. If one person reads it or if two people read it, you fulfill the obligation. We'll talk about what all this means in a future class. We're just going to read the Mishnah, but we're really going to focus on that first line in just a moment. Makom shenagu levarech, yevarech, v'shelo levarech, lo yevarech. In places where the custom is to recite a bracha, you say the bracha. And if the custom is not to say a bracha, you don't say a bracha. For example, when Ra'anan read Kohelet, the Megillah of Kohelet on Sukkot, he did not recite a bracha, because that's the custom with most Megillot, is that we don't say a bracha. However, many places do have a custom that if you're reading the Megillah from a cloth, even if it's Megillat Kohelet, you do say the bracha of Al Mikra Megillah before you read the Megillah, even if it's Kohelet or other Megillot as well. But we just say it for the Megillah.
Why would you not say a bracha, though?
There are customs not to say a bracha. There are places where they had a custom not to say a bracha.
Yep. It's just weird that you choose not to if you
could. Because it's a, no, it's a, well.
Usually if you can say a bracha, you do.
Like, no, usually you only say a bracha if you have to say a bracha.
If you have to.
Because otherwise, you normally say safek brachot lahakel.
But like when the new bloom or stuff like this, I mean, you go looking for a bracha for those things. I mean,
the truth is that there is something called safek brachot lahakel. You only say a bracha if you are absolutely in a position to say a bracha. And if there's ever a situation where you're not sure whether or not you should say a bracha, usually you don't say a bracha. Usually you
that
don't. There's only, there are a couple of exceptions, but there's really only one exception.
Okay.
But usually, if you're not sure whether you've said a bracha, usually brachot are not what's called me'akev. They're not, if you shook a lulav, but you didn't say the bracha on the lulav, you still fulfilled the mitzvah of lulav equally. The bracha was established by the rabbis to direct our attention to shaking the lulav, but it's not. That's why, by the way, the non-Hasidic rabbis were very opposed to the custom of saying, the Hasidic introduction of saying, l'shem yichud, or hineni muchanim zuman. Some people say, if you read before a lot of Birkot HaMitzvah, it says hineni muchanim zuman. Well, what's that supposed to do? The whole point of the bracha, rabbis only instituted the bracha to get us to focus on doing the mitzvah. So what are you doing? Now you're going to say something to get you to focus on the thing that's getting you to focus on the thing. That's too many times removed. So the non-Hasidic rabbi is very opposed to hineni muchanim zuman and all those kinds of additions.
That's a good song.
I don't say any hineni muchanim zumans at all. Exactly. Okay. That's what meaning they think it's redundant. What did the rabbi? You think the rabbis of the Gemara weren't good enough? They didn't make a good enough bracha. You have to make a new bracha for the bracha. Okay. Anyway, then they tell us about the Torah reading. B'sheni v'chamishi b'shabbat v'mincha korin shlosha. En pochatin ben ven mosifin aleihen. And on the Monday and Thursday, and on Shabbos afternoon, three people get an aliyah. You don't add, you don't subtract. Okay? Ve'ein maftirin ben avi. And there's no haftorah. Hapoteach ve'achotim b'torah mevarech lefanea ule'achareya. The first person to get an aliyah says a bracha before all the aliyot. And the last person says a bracha after all the aliyot. That's different from our practice, right? Our practice is that everybody says a bracha before and after the aliyah, but the original practice was there was a bracha before the Torah reading and there was a bracha after the Torah reading, and that was it.
I love you.
Sorry.
It's okay. Okay.
Sorry about that.
בראשי חודשים ובחולות של מועד קוראין ארבעה, אין פוחתין מהן ואין מוסיפין אליהן, ואין מפטירין בנביא, הפותח והחותם בתורה, מברך לפניה לאחריה. On Chol HaMoed, on Rosh Chodesh, there's four aliyot, you don't add, you don't subtract, and you have one bracha at the beginning, one bracha at the end. זה הכלל, כל שיש במוסף, ואינו יום טוב, קוראין ארבעה. On any day that there's מוסף, but it's not a יום טוב, there's four aliyot. That's Chol HaMoed and Rosh Chodesh. It's an interesting question as why the Mishnah basically repeated itself. There's no other days on which there's Musaf and it's not a Yom Tov except for Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed. So first it told us Rosh Chodesh and Chol HaMoed, there's four aliyot, and then it says any day that has Musaf but isn't Yom Tov. So we'll get into why that redundancy later on. That's not our topic for today, but just it's a glaring redundancy in the Mishnah. Okay. ביום טוב חמישה, on Yom Tov there's five aliyot, ביום הכיפורים שישה, on Yom Kippur six, בשבת שבעה, אין פוחתין מהן, on Shabbat there's seven, and you cannot subtract from the seven, there's no never fewer than seven aliyot on Shabbat, אבל מוסיפין עליהן, but you can add aliyot on Shabbat. ומפטירין בנביא, and you say a haftorah on Shabbos. Why do we say a haftorah on Shabbos?
It was because there was a time when you couldn't say Torah.
So yeah, so tell us more about that.
And that's all I know. Is that Torah was forbidden.
So in the Roman times, the Torah was forbidden. I don't know why the Romans were, they had a problem with Torah, but they had no problem with the Nevi'im. I never understood why they were opposed to Torah reading, but not opposed to Navi reading. Anyway, we then kept all those Navi readings,
we
and that's
sure
the half
did.
Torah.
Nothing gets taken away.
Yeah, that's right.
You've added it.
Maybe because there's all the pomp and ceremony around taking out the Torah, and maybe there was even then, and Haftarah, just somebody opens
it. Maybe, could be, yeah. Hapotach v'chotem b'Torah mevarech lefaneh alachareh, and there's a brach at the beginning and a brach at the end.
No, actually, wouldn't the Haftarah have been a scroll as well at that time?
Yeah, it would have been a scroll.
But it wouldn't have necessarily had the pomp and ceremony.
I don't know. Anyway, we're now going to go back to that first line. Hakoreta megillah omed v'yoshev. If you read the Megillah, you can sit or stand. The Gemara now takes us to the Torah reading. Does this, the Gemara immediately says, Tana, ma she'enken b'Torah. That is not the case with regards to the Torah. How must the Torah be read?
Standing.
Must be read standing. Minahani mili, what is the source for the fact the Torah must be read standing? Amar Rabbi Abahu, Damar Kra, Ve'ata Po Amod Imadi. Rabbi Abahu says that he quotes the Pasuk, when God tells Moshe, I'm going to give you all the mitzvot, and you stand here with me. Ve'ata Po Amod Imadi. So when Moshe learned the mitzvot, what position was he in? Amod Imadi, stand here with me. Then, by the way, the rabbis now, kind of as an aside, point out how theologically fascinating that statement is. They say, "V'amar Rabbi Abahu, ilmalei mikra katuv, i'efshar le'omro." Were it not a written pasuk, you wouldn't have been able to say that. Kivyachol, I lost my place. Kivyachol af Hakadosh Baruch Hu be'amida. As though God is actually standing, right? Normally we don't like anthropomorphism of God. We like God to be abstract and different, but if the Pasuk didn't say God was standing, we wouldn't be able to say it. But here we are, God and Moshe were standing together. The Gemara then continues, V'amar Rabbi Abahu, minayin lirav shelo yoshev al gabei mita v'yishane letalmido al gabei karka. How do we know that the rabbi, the teacher, shouldn't sit on a bench and the students should all sit on the floor? Meaning there's a rule that the rabbi, the teacher, and the students should all be on the same level. How do you know that? When God taught Moshe the mitzvot,
Were they on the same level?
No.
Atapo amod imadi. You stand here with me. So too, when a teacher teaches students, they should be on the same level. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. Mimot Moshe v'ad Rabban Gamliel. Lo hayu lemedin Torah ela me'umad. From the days of Moshe until Rabban Gamliel, they stood up whenever they learned Torah. Mishemet Rabban Gamliel yarad choli la'olam v'hayu lomdin Torah miyushav. When Rabban Gamliel died, the whole world became ill. They became weaker. And they had to study Torah sitting down. V'hayinu ditnan mishemet Rabban Gamliel batel kvod Torah. And that's what it means when the Mishnah says, from when Rabban Gamliel died, the honor of the Torah was nullified, was canceled. When did Rabban Gamliel live? Anybody know?
Second Temple era.
The end of the Second Temple era. He died.
Did he overlap with the Romans?
Yeah. So he lived at the very end of the Second Temple era. So actually, Rambam, when he cites this, when Maimonides cites this passage, he does not say that we now study Torah sitting since the days of Rabban Gamliel, when Rabban Gamliel died. He says from the end of the Second Temple. Once the Second Temple was destroyed, that's when we became too weak. But it was, they're basically around the same time. Rabban Gamliel died around the time the Second Temple was destroyed. Mm. Anyway, the Gemara continues. Ketuv, now the Gemara cites two contradicting verses about Moshe learning the mitzvot from God. Right up until now, we learned that Moshe was standing when he learned the mitzvot from God. But we're going to see two contradicting verses. Ketuv echad omer va'eshev bahar. One verse says, the whole verse is like this. When I went up, Moshe sang, when I went up to the mountain to get the stone tablets, asher karat Hashem imachem, that God made a covenant with you, va'eshev bahar 40 yom v'arbaim laila. I sat on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. What did he do?
He sat.
The other pasuk says, ketuv acher omer, and the other verse says, I stood on the mountain. So which one is it? Was he sitting or was he standing? Oh, that's like my Dvar Torah from today. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So which one was it? So the rabbis come up with four different possibilities as to how to resolve the contradiction between these two verses. Amar Rav, Rav said, Omed velomed, Yoshev veshone. He would stand when he first learned all the mitzvot, and then to review, he sat down. Shone, Mishnah, is from the word review, to repeat. That's Rav's opinion. Rabbi Chanina Amar, Lo omed velo Yoshev, Ela shoche. Rabbi Chanina says, he wasn't standing and he wasn't sitting, he was bowing down. So it's in between standing and sitting. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, En yeshiva ela lashon akava. Yoshev here doesn't mean he literally sat. It means he dwelled. He waited. He was there for a while. Sheneimar v'teshvu bekadesh yamim rabim. As the pasuk says many times, that they yashvu, they dwelled. They were somewhere for a long time. Rav Amar, Rakot Me'umad, V'kashot Me'yushav. Rav said that the easy mitzvot he learned standing up, and the hard mitzvot he learned sitting down. And yet, I have to sit down for this. I got to sit down.
Got to focus.
That's right. Okay. I want to go back to the first thing we learned. And that is that you have to stand when you read the Torah. Tana Masha'in Kin B'Torah. Why do you have to stand while reading the Torah? Why must you stand while reading the Torah? Does everybody have to stand while reading the Torah, or only the Torah reader has to stand?
Just the Torah reader, in our custom.
As far as you know, only the Torah reader, right? Yeah. So why do we have to stand? Why does the Torah reader have to stand? Why can't he sit and read the Torah?
The chazan is doing the reading for the whole congregation, so everyone needs to hear it.
Or see.
Okay, so maybe it's practical.
Or see the person reading.
Okay.
Like, be able to focus attention on.
So the Yerushalmi, the Palestinian Talmud, the Jerusalem Talmud, has two opinions that it cites as to why, the reason behind it. So we saw a source, Vatapo Abodi Madi. That's a source, but that's not a reason. That's a makor, but not a tam. But what's the reason? Here we go. Page 2. So the Yerushalmi here, by the way, in the Yerushalmi, the chapters of Megillah are flipped. What's the with the third chapter in the Babylonian Talmud is the fourth chapter in the Yerushalmi Talmud, and the third chapter, fourth chapter in the Yerushalmi, and vice versa. It's flipped, okay? Good. So the Yerushalmi asks, first of all, it asks, Mahu la'amod b'pnei sefer Torah? What is the rule with regards to standing before a Torah? What are you supposed to do when the Torah passes by you?
Stand.
You got to stand. Rabbi Chilkia, Rabbi Simon, Beshem Rabbi Lazar. So Rabbi Chilkia said in the name of Rabbi Simon, who said in the name of Rabbi Elazar, said, Mipnei b'nahu omed, lo kol sheken mipnei Torah atzma. We stand before the children of the Torah, the b'na, the children of the Torah, all the more so we should stand before the Torah itself. Who are the children of the Torah? Who is he talking about? Who are you supposed to stand? If a Talmud Chacham, yeah. If a Talmud Chacham walks in, you're all supposed to stand. What's interesting is, nowadays, do more people stand for the rabbi or stand for the Torah?
Torah.
More people stand for the Torah. In the days of the Yerushalmi, what did more people stand for?
The rabbis?
Mm-hmm. Obviously, apparently, everybody was standing for the rabbis. And Rabbi Elazar said, if we stand for the rabbis, shouldn't we all the more so stand for the Torah itself? Mm-hmm. And it's not, you know, a Talmud Chacham is like the Rav Soloveitchik had a whole drasha that he gave. A Talmud Chacham is like a Sefer Torah, something like that. But that's not the... Maybe I'm messing it up. There's a great story. Rav Soloveitchik only went to Israel once in his life. Do you know the story of when Rav Soloveitchik went to Israel? He'd just been brought to America, to Boston. Actually, one of my closest friends is getting married with the great... He's getting married in January to the granddaughter of the... the fellow who's the head of the search committee in Boston brought Rav Soloveitchik over from Europe. Anyway.
Good catch.
Yeah. Because I have the Rav Soloveitchik book, and her last name appears in the book multiple times because her father knew the Rav and her grandfather knew the Rav. So it was probably her great-grandfather. I'm mixing it up. Right, it must have been her great-grandfather. And even so, I asked him, "Is this, you know, her family?" Yeah, that's her family. Anyway, Rav Soloveitchik went to Israel once, shortly after he came to America, before his father passed away, and he would take over Yeshiva University from his father. So he's only here for a few years, and he was a candidate to be chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, and he went to Israel. For his prabba. He went there for a week or so, whatever it was, to go around and for people to meet him. But he was very young. He must have been 32 or 33 or something like that. So he didn't get the job because they felt he was too young for the job, and they gave it to Rabbi Moshe Avigdor Amiel instead. But also a great rabbi. But Rav Soloveitchik had a reputation that preceded him because of his family. And when Rav Kook met him, Rav Kook and Rav Soloveitchik met once, Rav Kook kissed Rav Soloveitchik. Either Rav Kook himself or one of Rav Kook's students said to Rav Soloveitchik, it's because, you know, you're supposed to kiss a Sefer Torah when it passes by, and you're such a great scholar, you're like a Sefer Torah itself. Anyway, obviously they used to respect the rabbis more than the Sefer Torah itself, and so we're learning from that. Anyway, Zeshu Omer Likot BaTorah, the fact that we stand to read the Torah, Mipnei mahu omed? Why do we stand? Mipnei kvoda, or mipnei kvoda rabim? Because of the Torah's honor, or because of the congregation's honor. Mm. So we always stand to honor something. Standing means we're honoring something. We stand before the Sefer Torah. But when we stand to read it, is it because we're honoring the Sefer Torah, or is it because we're honoring the community? What do you think the answer is? What do you think?
I think it's going to be community.
Why?
Because I think it's the Torah, and I can never remember I was wrong.
What?
Last time we did do this.
Oh, we did this, and you said the Torah. Okay.
And I was wrong.
So it's actually not clear what the Yerushalmi answers. The Yerushalmi is much more cryptic to understand the Babylonian Talmud. It's much more difficult to understand. Here's what the Yerushalmi says. In tomar mipnei kvoda, afilu beino leveina. If you say it's because of the honor of the Torah, then even if it's just you and the Torah alone, you would have to stand. Because it's the honor of the Torah. Now here comes a very strange line. In tomar mipnei kvoda rabim, afilu beino leveina tzmo. If you say it's because of the honor of the congregation, then even if it's just you alone. So that doesn't make any sense. So the commentaries fix it and say it must mean afilu beino veinatzmo eino tzarich lamod. That's what the commentary on the right over there says. Meaning, then alone you would not have to stand. Now here's what the Yerushalmi says. Mipnei kvoda hu omed. What does the Yerushalmi say? Because of its honor, we stand. Mipnei kvoda hu omed. Because of its honor, not the congregation's honor, its honor we stand. Then the Yerushalmi adds, "Im omeratken, if you say so, af hu mitatzel ve'eino kore." Don't forget that in those days there was no such thing as a printed chumash. If you wanted to learn Torah, you had to open up the scroll and learn from the Torah. So it says, if you say that we have to stand because of the honor of the Torah, then people won't learn Torah because they're going to be too lazy to stand. Afumit atzel. You get lazy, and you're not going to open up the Torah to stand up to learn Torah. What do you think?
I know people well.
So, do you think that they paskin, that it's because of its honor, and then they just add something on? Or do you think they paskin that it's because of the community's honor, because of the impossibility of saying it's because of its honor? Because you could write, the Yerushalmi is cryptic. It has far fewer, the Bavli had what's called the Saboraim, the later rabbis who inserted words and connecting words between the words of the Amoraim. And the Yerushalmi is edited much earlier than the Bavli. It only has the words of the Amoraim. So sometimes we're missing just, you know, connecting words to know what's going on. So you could read this two ways. You could read, yeah, Mipnei Kvodahu Omed. And that's indeed what the commentary here. This is the Korban Ha'idah. Look at the commentary on the bottom. I made a little underline. You see, v'hamaskanahi, what does maskana mean? It means conclusion. The conclusion is, mipnei kvoda, shel Torah hu omed. The commentary here read this Yerushalmi as saying, yeah, we say it's because of its honor. And, however, we may, and then I'm going to translate this commentary for you. What the commentary here says is, yeah, we paskin that we stand for its honor, but because people are lazy, we made a special dispensation that if you're alone, you don't have to stand up. Okay? That's what this commentary says. You could have easily read it, right? You could have read Mipnei Kvodahu Omed, not with a period, but with a question mark. Right? Listen to this in Hebrew, back in the Yerushalmi. Mipnei Kvodahu Omed, ve'im omerat ken, that's how our commentary read it. You could have read it. You stand because of its honor? If so, people would be too lazy and never read it. It must be that we stand because of honor of the congregation. You could read it either way, I think, in the Yerushalmi.
Isn't there a principle, I think, that Rashi talks about, where when it's unclear what a sentence is saying is that you need to go back to the previous verse and find the object of the last phrase.
I mean, that's true in the Torah, but not in the Yerushalmi is terse. I mean, this is not, that's the objects and subjects. These are not, that's not a principle that is operative in either in the Bavli or in the Yerushalmi.
because there's not, it's just, there's not enough words to make that. In the Torah, you're right. In the Torah, you have to, you can absolutely go back. The Torah is written like a beautiful work of literature. So, you can do that. So you could really read it either way, but that's what they say. Let's go to the next page for a second. I think we read this passage from Rav Soloveitchik last time. You know, there are those who had a practice to stand up whenever the Torah was being read, and Rav Soloveitchik thought that that was because whenever we read the Torah, it's like we're accepting the Torah at Har Sinai when we all have to reenact it. I think Rav Soloveitchik probably stood during the whole Torah reading. The Maharam of Ruttenberg had the practice of standing for the whole Torah reading. There are many people who have that practice. But Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his lectures in honor of his father, one of the Yahrzeit lectures, made the point that this was because it was symbolic of the accepting of the Torah at Sinai. Anyway, I want to go back for a second to our original thing. That's where we left off last time, and I want to introduce a kind of different topic today. And it is a halachic ramification of this Mishnah. One thing that you have to remember is that there's no such thing as getting an aliyah without reading the Torah. Okay? Originally, when the rabbis instituted Torah reading, everybody learned how to read their aliyah. In the Yemenite shuls, right? Your father's shul. Did they have a Torah reader?
No.
Whoever gets the aliyah goes up and reads the Torah.
I mean, there's one guy there's every evidence. You know, nowadays, it's not as like it was, you know.
Yeah, okay.
So there's always one guy who can read for the person who doesn't know.
Okay.
But still, the general practice is everybody knows.
But there's no difference halachically between the person reading and the person getting the aliyah. They're like one and the same. The person reading is just doing it on behalf of the person getting the aliyah. So now let's ask a question. What happens if someone is disabled and is in a wheelchair? Are you allowed to give them an aliyah? After all, we just read that you have to stand when you read the Torah, right? You have to stand and read the Masha'ein Kein B'Torah. The Megillah, you can stand or sit down. But the Torah, you have to stand while you read it. And there's no such thing as getting an aliyah without reading. All the rules that apply to the Torah reader presumably also apply to the person getting the aliyah. So what do you think? Are you allowed to give an aliyah to a person in a wheelchair? And furthermore, can a person in a wheelchair be a Torah reader and read from the Torah?
I think it depends on when you're paskening. My guess is there were times when they said no.
But let's look at this ahistorically for a second. Based on the principles that we studied, what do you think?
No.
No. Anybody else? What do you think?
Well,
let's go. First of all, let's analyze the reasoning a little bit. Why do you stand? Why do you stand for the Torah? If it's honor of the Torah, well, then there's probably very little you could do to get out of it. If it's honor of the congregation, perhaps the congregation can waive its honor in this case. Mm-hmm. Perhaps
they can waive it in other cases. Then
I knew you would say that, but perhaps
you set it up.
I did set it up. That's actually not the direction that the poskim are going to go in.
Correct. But they could.
Because it's possible that they don't like doing that. However, let's go back to our original Mishnah. Hakoreh et ha-Megillah omed ve-yoshev. What does that sound like? Does that sound... And whenever you read a Mishnah, a rule... There are a lot of questions. Those of us who are, you know, people who study Talmud a lot, they have like automatic questions that you know, you ask immediately. Is that lechatchila or even bediyeved? Okay? What does lechatchila and bediyeved mean? Lechatchila means, is that something you can ab initio do from the get-go? Can I decide to sit or to stand? Bediyeved means, if somebody sat, meaning, if it's only bediyeved, then lechatchila, you should stand. If you're going to read the Megillah, you should stand. What happens if somebody happened to be, you were at a shul, they didn't know the rules, somebody was sitting and you heard the Megillah, did you fulfill your reading of the Megillah, or do you have to hear it again?
It's about intention, isn't it? About intention.
Well, it's about whether something is an absolute built-in requirement or a preference. Mm-hmm.
Okay? They're all the rules for b'di'evid really, really mean that there are things, you know, b'di'evid usually means, in this case, everything is derabanan, because even Torah reading is derabanan. Everything, the rabbis instituted that we should read the Torah. Maybe earlier than regular derabanans, it might have an in-between status, but basically it's not do-raita to read the Torah. However, a good example would be, you know, normally you're supposed to have separate sets of dishes for meat and dairy. Lechatchila, you're not allowed to cook milk in your meat pot. You're not allowed to do that. However, what happens if you made a mistake and you cooked milk in your meat pot? So there are certain cases, you know, there might be a situation in which the milk is treif, but there are other cases in which the milk might be kosher. Even though you weren't really allowed to do that from the get-go, but d'yeved, the milk might still be kosher. This is not our topic. I don't want to get into the details. But there's a difference between lechatchila and b'di'evid. So when you read a rule like this in the Mishnah, what do you think? Are you allowed to read the Megillah? Are you allowed to choose how you want to read the Megillah? Or is this a statement about fulfilling the mitzvah after the fact? What do you think?
Well, as you said at the beginning, there seems like there's flexibility. You can do it either way.
Sit or stand.
So it sounds like it's lechatchila, right? Yeah. It sounds like it's lechatchila. It sounds like you may choose to sit or stand.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you fulfill the mitzvah, the d'yevid, whether you sit or stand. So now let's look at the Gemara. This is how you read the Gemara for information, infer. Now we say, and that Masha ain kein batorah. That is not the case with the Torah reading. So now, if the whole Mishnah was the Chatchila, we can read the Gemara like this. And that is not the case, namely that you can choose whether to sit or stand when it comes to the Torah reading. However, b'di'eved, if somebody were sitting, you still fulfill the Torah reading. Or you can read it differently. You could say when it comes to the Megillah reading, you can sit or stand, and you fulfill it sitting or standing, which is not the case of the Torah, where you only fulfill it standing up, and you don't fulfill it sitting down. Right, both are plausible readings of the Gemara's inference from the Mishnah. Right, the Mishnah said, when you read the Megillah, you can sit or stand. And the Gemara said, that is not the case with the Torah. What's not the case with the Torah? The Lechatchila or even the Bediavid? Which one is not the case with the Torah? Both of them or only one of them?
That you have a choice.
So take a look at the back. I have a response from here. He's a rabbi in Israel. I can't remember his name, but he writes, he has like 30 volumes of response about like every topic you can think of that's a contemporary topic. So, Chevel Nachalato. He's a religious Zionist rabbi. He's a student of Rabbi Avraham Shapira and Rabbi Dov, all the big religious Zionist rabbis. So he kind of puts together a lot of their ideas. Somebody asked him, Sheila, Hay mutar la'alot lekriya b'Torah, Are you allowed to give an aliyah or let somebody read, somebody who's handicapped and is in a wheelchair? First, he quotes Rav Ovadia Yosef. Rav Ovadia Yosef writes the following. You see the different font? That's the quotation from Ovadia Yosef. Shaliach tzibur sheyoda likro b'Torah b'ta'ameha v'dikdukeha. A cantor or a Torah, a reader, who knows how to read the Torah properly. And he had an illness in his legs to the point that he became handicapped, God forbid. And he is bound to a wheelchair. If it's possible for other people to help him out and let him stand up and lean on the bima, and that way he can read from the Torah, he's allowed to read from the Torah. Mm. But if he can't stand up at all, even if he's leaning on the table, the reason why he's saying that, by the way, is that the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah before him say that even leaning is forbidden. They derive that leaning is equivalent to sitting. So here he's saying that we'll be lenient about the leaning, but not lenient about the sitting. Rashai liot shaliach tzibur v'likro b'torah. Aval im eino yachol la'amod klal, afilo l'edei smicha gmura, even if he can't lean, ein la'atir l'neche kezeh liot shaliach tzibur v'likro b'torah miyushav. We're not allowed to let him be a Torah reader sitting down.
Hevel Nachalato, this responsum disagrees with Rav Avadei Yosef. So he goes through a number of things. In passage two, it's a several page long responsum, and I just took some of the pieces out. In passage two, he just points out that the person reading the Torah and the person getting the Aliyah have the same halachic status as far as we're concerned. They're not different from each other. In passage three, he writes the following. Hayerushalmi, you see where it says three? Hayerushalmi chakar mipnei ma tzarich la'amod b'kriyat ha-Torah. The Yerushalmi asked, why do you have to stand for the Torah reading? We read that, Yerushalmi, right? Hay mipnei kvod ha-Torah o mipnei kvod ha-Rabim. Is it because of honor of the Torah or honor of the congregation? Umaskanato she'tzarich la'amod mipnei kvod ha-Rabim. And it concluded that you have to stand because of honor of the congregation. Clearly, he does not read the Yerushalmi the same way the commentary that we saw read the Yerushalmi, right? Because if you say that it's because of the honor of the Torah, he'd get lazy and not read the Torah. We've learned a number of important principles, and here I didn't include all of the previous things. You see, I'm on four now. Reshit shakriya b'Torah ilimu Torah. ולכן הסיק הגמרא שכדי שלא יבטל, תקנו שיקרא וילמד בישיבה. ורק הקורא בציבור מפני כבוד הציבור צריך לעמוד. Only one who's reading in public, because of honor of the congregation, needs to stand. If you're reading it alone, you don't have to stand. וכל זה תקנת חכמים ולא מעיקר הדין. And all of this is a rabbinic decree and not עיקר הדין. Not part of the essence of the Torah reading. Because if it was part of the essence of the Torah reading, they wouldn't be able to be lenient about reading in public, in private. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Chidesh Tzad Nosaf. I don't want to get into this. Okay. Yeah. Let's go to section 5. So in section 5, I didn't include all the original sources. But I did look up all the original sources because I was curious to see how they all added up. But the Bach was a commentary on the Tor, and the Magen Avraham read our Mishnah and Gemara differently. The Bach thought that the whole Mishnah about reading the Megillah is Bediyeved. Listen to this. When the Mishnah and Megillah said, you can read the Megillah standing or sitting, that was only Bediyeved. Lechatchila, says the Bach, you have to stand. But it's only Bediyeved that you're allowed to sit. Therefore, when the Gemara says that that is not the case with regards to the Torah, it's all talking about the Bediyeved. Because the whole Mishnah wasn't talking about Lechatchila at all. The whole Mishnah was talking about Bediyeved. So according to the Bach, if you heard a Torah reader reading, sitting down, you have to hear the Torah reading again. You have to read the Torah again in your shul. Because that's Bediyeved, the Megillah, you're allowed to hear sitting or standing. Masha'in kein b'Torah. But in the Torah, you're not allowed to hear sitting or standing. That's the Bach and the Magen Avraham and a couple of other commentaries. But other commentaries disagree, namely the Beit Yosef. The Beit Yosef is the author of the Shulchan Aruch, but in his much longer and extensive commentary, he says that the passage about the Megillah is Lechatchila, and therefore the Torah requirement is also only about Lechatchila, and not about Bediyeved, and therefore after the fact, if you heard somebody read the Torah, if the shul had somebody read the Torah sitting down, after the fact, you'd fulfill the mitzvah. You'd fulfill hearing the Torah. Okay? And ultimately, this rabbi thinks that that's the main opinion. There are many, many, he says, the majority opinion is that the whole mission about Megillah was only about Lechatchila and not about Bediyeved, and therefore the Torah is only about Lechatchila and not about Bediyeved. So he says the majority opinion is that you fulfill the mitzvah of hearing the Torah, of having a public Torah reading if somebody read it sitting down. Okay? 6. Kol zot be'adam bari b'kriya b'tzibur. All of this applies to a healthy individual in the public Torah reading. V'kal v'chomer b'nechelo aleinu. And of course, with regards to a handicapped person as well. Meaning, bedieved, you fulfill it. Tari anusu. Ve'en bishivato lochir shino mekabelet ha-Torah be'ima o'vira. And what's furthermore is that somebody who's handicapped or disabled and is bound to a wheelchair is anus. He is bound. He has no choice but to be in the wheelchair. He has no ability to stand up. And therefore, his sitting down is not because he is disrespecting the congregation. It's not because there was another passage in the Yerushalmi, which we did not read, that says that another reason why we stand for the Torah reading is because we accept the Torah just as the Israelites accept the Torah with eimah, with fear. We should also accept the Torah with fear, and you stand up for fear. So if somebody's handy in a wheelchair, when they don't stand up, it's not because they don't have all of the Torah or all of God, and it's not because they want to disrespect the congregation. It's because they have no choice but to sit in the wheelchair. They're literally
that's anus.
Anus, yeah. Anus means they have
Arabic,
no choice.
Oh, okay. Arabic anus is like chetzi.
Is what?
Chetzi.
What does it mean, half?
Yeah. Anus in Arabic is chetzi.
Means half?
Yeah.
Anus in Hebrew just means you're like anus, the anusim who were forced to convert.
Right. Forced
conversions. Okay. Anus means you're forced to do something.
Okay.
Ones rachmana patra. We say that if you're anus, if you're forced to do something, then you're exempt from any punishment. You don't get punished for something that you're forced to do. So he writes, ולכן נראה שצריך להעלותו לתורה אף אם יושב על כיסא גלגלים. וממילא אם הוא נוהג כרמב״ם יקרא בתורה בעצמו. So therefore you should let him go up, read it, you know, go up and get an aliyah, and if they follow the Rambam's practice, which is the Yemenite practice, he should read the Torah for himself just like anybody else. ואם כשאר קהילות רשאי להעלות לתורה ובא לקרוא יקרא עבורו, and in other congregations where there's a chazan, there's a Baal Korah who reads, then you give him an aliyah, and he looks at, you know, he'll do what everybody else does, look in the Torah and follow along. And he says, if you have to tilt the Torah for him a little bit so he can read it, you should tilt the Torah a little bit for him so he can read it. However, he does say, right, because lechatchila, so now he's going to do something that he said originally we don't do, which is distinguish between the person reading the Torah and the person getting the aliyah.
The Torahs are different, too.
He basically, he's right.
Sitting up already.
Right, that's right. Basically, he says that the whole Mishnah is about reading the Torah. And that's lechatchila. So lechatchila, if you have somebody who can stand to read the Torah, you should really have somebody stand to read the Torah. But if you only have somebody who's in a wheelchair who knows how to read the Torah, then they can be the Torah reader as well. Meaning he says that's the bedieved of reading. So getting an aliyah, you can certainly give, he says, somebody in a wheelchair an aliyah. When it comes to reading the Torah, if he's the one who knows how to read the Torah, you can let him read the Torah, because that's already bedieved. Meaning he's the one who knows how to read it. So he can read it. But lechatchila, if you have an option, you know, you should have somebody else do it. In my old shul, by the way, in the Hashkama Minyan, there was a fellow who was in a wheelchair, and he was one of the most proficient Torah readers who went to the Hashkama Minyan. He read almost every other Shabbos. He would read the Torah because he was, you know, somebody. The most important thing is to be proficient, and in, you know, it's a greater dishonor to the Torah to read it incorrectly mm-hmm. than it is to read it sitting down. I think that's obvious.
Yeah,
that's an obvious statement. So if the person who knows how to read it best has to sit down to read it, then I think that would be...
The Ashkenazi Sefer Torahs are just less handicap friendly.
They are, because they're looking up, and the other ones are...
They also make humans that go down for handicapped folks.
Right. Our Bima here is not very handicap friendly. We actually had a situation...
The Bima, right, the Bima is not...
The Bima is handicap accessible. The front Bima is handicap accessible.
But not the Torah Bima.
Not the shulchan is not. Yeah. So we had, there was somebody who wanted, he actually didn't end up making the shul, but there was somebody in a wheelchair who wanted to get an aliyah a year and a half or 2 years ago. And we had a whole plan in place. We were going to move, you're not supposed to move the Torah just for one person. So we were going to move the Torah for a couple of aliyot to a lower table off of the shulchan. Including that aliyah, then bring it back up. But unfortunately, they didn't make it to shul anyway, so it didn't end up materializing. But we would have done that were it the case. Anyway, I think this is a fascinating thing, and actually, it's interesting to see how, you know, real life shul situations, right? That's what we're going to see in the third and fourth chapters of Megillah. They're going to be full of real life shul situations because it's all the rules of Torah reading and a shul. So to see that this rule of you have to stand up for the Torah reading, you know, how that plays out in a real life situation, I think is a fascinating and important thing for us to study as we study the Gemara. Okay, thank you. Thank you.